It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Born
of one.
Yeah, well, you're
half
right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is
going to
be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Old friends, new friends, morning.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Taking you over the hump on a Wednesday, it is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy. We've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Give us your thoughts on what's on your sports brain. And right now, my weather brain is showing me a lot of animation on the radar. And this is not something you want to see when you've got a baseball game to be played. And when I say animation, there is some green figures that are moving across my screen.
Uh-oh.
They're called showers. And right now they're working their way through central Indiana, moving in a northeasterly direction. I hope that we can play some baseball tonight. Tin Caps game two of their six-game series scheduled against the Lake County Captains. Unfortunately, the Tin Caps lost the home opener last night, 7-2, surrendering four long balls.
Yeah.
Tin Caps did get one of their own from Nerwillian Cedeno, and Ethan Salas, top prospect for the Padres, did get a line drive double down the right field line. But those were the only offensive bright spots, really, for the Tin Caps, who really struggled last night offensively. In fact, they've struggled the majority of their first four games. Got to get the offense clicking a little bit and put up some runs. Tonight it is Haynes that will be pitching. And, you know, I should know, like, his first name, Jagger, because it's like, that's a cool name, Jagger Haynes.
That is a cool name.
Haynes is a left-hander, 6'3", 170 pounds, out of Whiteville, North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
And played at Lake Elsinore last year, fifth-round draft pick back in 2020. I think that was the year of the shortened draft.
I don't know.
COVID year.
Makes sense.
But anyway.
Yeah.
He'll be on the mound for the Tin Caps tonight as they try to even up the series against Lake County and get in a game.
Checking in on the text line. We know who this is from. They said it is Wednesday after all, in reference to going to the Tin Caps,
yes,
and there being weather.
Yes, because that that senior citizen mini season ticket package. Yeah, that's our buddy. Who seems to bring Wednesday rain.
Bad luck.
Now, from the other side of it, I know he has tickets to go to Wednesday games, but from the other side of it, if there's a game that you, if it's going to rain out during the course of the week, Wednesday might be the best one because you got some flexibility on when you reschedule it because you've still got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday as games to be played. Plus, Wednesday is the most difficult as far as attendance goes. Last night, 4,422 fans at the ballpark. Tonight would have been probably something around 2,400, 2,500, 2,600. And then I don't know how they count the dogs.
Yeah, do they count for
the
attendance?
Bark in the park night tonight?
You do have to buy a special ticket for your dog, so I think it should account towards attendance.
Well, they've got four legs instead of two. Maybe they should count double.
Hey, now we're really thinking.
Yeah, now we're dating. All I can say is I hope to see you at the ballpark tonight, but I can understand if you opt to perhaps just listen to it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Not to give you incentive to listen, but Mike Moss and I will have the radio coverage for you tonight.
Yes, sir.
We might end up going to our film material if we have rain delays.
Do you have a tight 30 routine there, a little comedy routine or something?
Yeah. No. Mike Moss is... he's a comedian in and of himself. I mean, he's just a funny guy.
Oh,
just a fun guy to hang with. So Yeah, we'll figure it out on the fly. But right now, there is some rain working its way through Indiana, coming up from the south.
Yeah.
We'll see what time it gets here.
Saw there was some shenanigans at IMS. They had to do a bunch of cancellations of practice races and test runs and stuff like that. So
the big testing day down in Indy?
Yeah, one of those.
One game tonight that will not be affected or impacted by the rain, although the last game was Comets at Wheeling.
Oh.
Those rainstorms that went through last week had some flooding in Wheeling, and it caused Wheeling to have to postpone the Friday game against the Comets, move it to tonight. It is still just as important tonight as it was on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Must-win situation for the Comets if they're going to get themselves into the playoffs. Right now, as of the start of the game tonight, the Comets are in a playoff position, at least at this point. But we're going to find out exactly how this all sorts out with Shane Alberani.
It's crazy.
Does he know tiebreakers? Do we know? I mean, what's the situation?
Yeah.
We'll get the complete scoop coming up in just minutes from Shane Alberani. So the Chicago Bears seem to have zeroed in on Caleb Williams. I think it seems pretty apparent at this point that Caleb Williams is going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft, and he is going to go to the Chicago Bears. But here was something interesting. The Bears apparently did have a meeting with Marvin Harrison Jr., widely expected to be perhaps in the top five or six of the draft and most likely going number four to Arizona, which means the Bears, who hold a number nine pick, would never get a shot at Marvin Harrison Jr. unless, number one, they do something really crazy and bear-like and take Marvin Harrison Jr. as the number one overall pick.
No way.
No way. Or they're looking at perhaps trying to get their quarterback-receiver combo of the future out of the same draft and will make a major investment to get up into the top five to get a shot at one of the wide receivers in this year's draft. I think it's bold for the Bears if they do make that move. I think at number nine, they will still be in a pretty favorable position to be able to take a high-impact player. But they did talk to Marvin Harrison Jr. Now, again, maybe the Bears are starting to get a feeling that if the Cardinals pass on him and you have a couple of teams that trade up to get quarterbacks, that maybe Marvin Harrison could slip to a position where the Bears wouldn't have to invest as much to move up a spot or two and try to get him. But honestly, I mean, that would probably excite Bears fans, but I think the Bears are better off to stay put. They've already got a couple of decent receivers. I know this is a special class of receivers. But I as a Colts fan, I don't want to see them make the bold move and get him, because if anybody makes a bold move to go up and get Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm hoping it's the Colts that do it. But I also understand in Ballard, we trust. And that's scary because he's not a guy that generally will make the bold move and go up and get a guy.
Right. We'll be talking to Kevin Bowen later this hour. We'll have to see if he thinks this could be the year that Chris Ballard might finally make a bold move.
Does he change his stripes for this year's draft? You know, and I feel like, and I've said this before, that if the Colts truly believe this roster was good enough to bring everybody back, then that is saying they really don't believe they have any gaping holes, because they believe everybody can play, and they were even willing to pay more money to some of these guys to get them to return. If that's the truth and that's how the Colts feel, that is as much evidence as you need for the reason to go up and make quality picks as opposed to quantity picks. Now, Chris Ballard has always taken the approach, he loves quantity. He loves to have extra picks, bring more guys in, create more competition in camp. But there comes a point where competition among a number of mediocre players doesn't make your football team overall a better football team. And that's basically been, in a nutshell, the history of Chris Ballard in Indianapolis. A lot of competition between a lot of guys that are not all-pro or Pro Bowl caliber players. Look at the defensive line. Look at linebacker. Zaire Franklin separated himself. But before that, you had Darius Leonard. But, you know, it's not like You've got a dominant linebacker. Look at wide receiver. A lot of very mediocre wide receivers have rotated through. They got lucky and got Michael Pittman Jr. And so, you know, you get enough of them, eventually you score with one. But even then, it's not like you get the superstar. You get an above-average player that separates themselves from the pack. Offensive line, I feel, is kind of the same way. And so bottom line is this seems to be, to me, the year that if Chris Ballard is ever going to be convinced that it's better to go out and get quality over quantity and to target very specific players and be aggressive in going and getting them, this should happen this year. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862.
A little bit of breaking news. Indiana State is going to be finalizing a deal to hire Matthew Graves as their next head coach. So the assistant under Josh Schertz.
See, and we talked about this. This is because I feel like Matthew Graves got put into the interim position with this thought in mind, that you transition from within and it keeps everybody together, right?
Right.
It's not happening. Unless these guys that have all entered the portal are all going to now have to decide between Matthew Graves and Josh Schertz, and they know at Indiana State, well, Schertz can't take all of them. He doesn't have enough roster spots. I don't get it. And I don't know if the NIL money is impacting this. Perhaps it's not anywhere near what it should be for a program out of the Missouri Valley Conference down in Terre Haute. I don't know what the cash side of it is. But Indiana State has lost all five starters. They've all entered the portal. They lost one of their reserves. They are down. And I think it's a good hire. I think Matthew Graves is ready to become a head coach. And I think familiarity with the program is certainly a real benefit. But it hasn't worked out the way you would envision it. You
right.
envision that, hey, you know, we lost our coach, but, you know, we've got an associate head coach who's got great relationships with these guys. He's going to continue, so we have a smooth transition, and it's not happening at Indiana State. They've lost all five of their starters.
Yeah, now you have to, you know, if they're not going to come back, you have to recruit as only being an assistant coach. I mean, I know you were head coach at, what was it, South Alabama? Yeah, South Alabama. He was the head coach, but now you are the past assistant coach, and I feel like that might affect recruiting as well.
Speaking of recruiting, Mastodon starting the process of building their roster for next year, and they have got three guys that have entered the portal, including Jermaine Coleman, who's already announced that he is transferring to St. Thomas University, member of the Summit League,
mm-hmm.
and they joined the Summit League after the Mastodons left. So the Dons were never a real rival in the Summit League with St. Thomas, but St. Thomas out of Minnesota, Minneapolis area, they have picked up Jermaine Coleman, the 6'7 wing out of Indianapolis, also Coy Thurman, has entered the portal as of just the last couple of days. And, you know, Coy is one of those guys, it's just a numbers game. Coy is very talented. He's a big-time scorer. He can find ways to score from the from distance and taking it to the basket. But unfortunately, when you look at the number of guards the Mastodons had on the roster with Bello and with Quint Morton Robertson and Jalen Jackson, that, you know, eventually it becomes a numbers game. C.J. Hadnott became the better of the two freshmen, and the first minutes off the bench went to Hadnott. And you only have so many minutes to play, guys. And here's the thing. Every one of those guys I just mentioned is coming back next year. So I don't know that the situation is going to be all that much different here for Coy Thurman. And so he made the decision to enter the portal. But for the Dons, it does leave them with a couple of scholarships open. They've got to, in my mind, they've got to try to find a guy 6'6", 6'7", get a good long wing.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Why are you smiling so funny?
I just have, I think you might know of a couple players you might have in mind. But.
Well, not necessarily 6'6", 6'7", wing. We certainly know one guy that we've talked about before.
Right.
We'd love to see come back home. But if you just look at roster construction, the one thing that the Dons didn't have in their resource bag was a 6'6", 6'7 wing. Somebody that had length at the wing that could cover a 3 or a 4, mm-hmm. depending if that's their best player on the other team. And it just gives you that guy who can maybe help on a rebound here and there, that can stretch the floor, but also provide you with a little bit of length and athleticism. And so I'd love to see a 6'6", 6'7", athletic wing, a guy that maybe even potentially could guard a small big. Because there are guys that are 6'7", 6'8", that play the big in the Horizon League. And then, you know, do they need another post? How deep are they at post? But they need, in my mind, strength and length.
Oh, a little rhyme there.
Guard play. That's my motto. Strength and length. Rashid Bello, Quinton Robertson, Jalen Jackson, CJ Hadnot. And then, of course, they're bringing in the freshman Mason Shrout, who does give them a little more height. I think he's like 6'4", and he's a terrific, unbelievable scorer and three-point shooter, shooting like 46% in high school from behind the three-point line, a finalist for Mr. Basketball in Ohio. And then up front, though, when you start to look at wings, guys that don't really necessarily fit the mold of a five-man, Max Nelson, and to his credit, he tried to give the Dons everything he had as a five-man, as a backup five, but he's much better as a true four. And then Destin Whitaker, who's a guy that's almost a perfect, four outside type of four man, where he's not going to be necessarily that power forward. He's going to be that tall wing. And then that's it. Those were a couple of guys off the bench this year. Down low right now, still have Eric Mulder as the starting big, Johnny Desjardins, D'Lo Ellis-A. So I think they've got to fill that middle void where they've got outstanding guard play. They've got a couple of bigs that can handle things around the basket, but they need that 6'6", 6'7", 6'8" guy. 4'6", 6'2", Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 4'6", 6'2". We got to take a break. We come back on the other side. Shane Alberani joins us from Wheeling, West Virginia. Comets and the Nailers tonight. We'll get a preview with Shane Alberani next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Ken Cash Baseball tonight on our side of the dial. We've got Mike Maas and me giving you Tin Caps Baseball starting at 6:15 with the pregame show. And over on WoWo, it is Comet Hockey. First of four games and five nights to wrap up the regular season. And there are some high stakes. You almost feel like the playoffs have already started for the Fort Wayne Comets. They have made it to Wheeling, West Virginia. And joining us is the voice of the Comets, who will call tonight's action, Shane Alberani. Shane, just give me a rundown. Where are we at going into tonight, and what does tonight mean?
This is a big one tonight. The Comets right now can actually finish as high as second place or miss the playoffs completely. That's where we are. That's how close things are in the Central Division going into these final four games. Tonight is not only big here in Wheeling, but it's also big over in Iowa because Iowa is hosting the Kalamazoo Wings. So depending on what happens here tonight, if the Comets get the win and Kalamazoo loses, the Comets will need one more point over the next three games to clinch a spot in the playoffs. But again, everything is on the table between second and fifth place where the Comets can finish. So, yeah, everything right now is really on the line here tonight because Wheeling is a point up on the Comets. They have played one less game than the Comets, so the Comets do have that game at hand. So we're probably not going to know where anything sits until Sunday.
Is it four teams for three positions, four teams for two positions, three teams for two positions? What is it as of right now?
Well, Toledo and Indy, they've got their spots. They're locked up, but we do not know positioning as far as Indy because Indy could actually fall out of that second spot. So you've got two teams that's clinched, so you've got three teams vying for the final two spots.
All right, Comets have had some success against Wheeling. What's the key?
The Comets are 5-2 against Wheeling. They played them very well in this barn, and really it's playing with the lead. This is a different team when they have the lead. So scoring first and then having that lead going into the third period, that's really going to be huge for them. And plus, if you get a power play, you're going to have to score. The Comets have been one of the better power play teams in the league all season long, and that's where they've kind of lived and died. So if you get your opportunities, you got to score.
I would say that the goalie could be chosen by flipping a coin, but you'd have to have a three-sided coin. Who gets the call in the nets tonight? Do you have an idea?
Yeah, it's going to be Ryan Fancy tonight. Brett Brochu is on injured reserve, so it's going to be Parks and Fancy going probably back and forth this weekend. So you got three games and three nights after today's game. So kind of depends on where we sit after tonight. You know, we're going to know here in a few hours what's going to happen kind of with the goaltending situation. I think Brett Brochu might actually be eligible to come off maybe those final two games of the regular season. So it's going to be up in the air, but for right now tonight, it's right.
What have we seen from the Comets lately? They had a pretty good weekend last week. What's been and some new names? I'm hearing you calling guys that I haven't heard you talk about this year. So what's going on?
Yeah, Arvin Katteroth was a guy we picked up out of Michigan Tech. You know, he wasn't expected to play on Sunday's game in Kalamazoo, but you know, Coach Jesse went ahead and just rolled the dice and threw the rookie in there, and man, he had himself a game. He was not intimidated. He's 6'5", he's 210. I mean, he is a big boy, and he threw his body around quite well in that game against Kalamazoo. So he wasn't scared at all going into this playoff race, you know, coming in as a rookie. So, no, he's actually been a nice little find there. And Harrison Reese also with Noah Gansky missed another game here tonight. We don't miss anything with Harrison Reese back at the blue line. He's been great. He scored the game winner in Kalamazoo. So, yeah, you know, you get these rookies, you know, the guys fresh out of college, they've got some fresh legs, you know, they're excited, they're enthusiastic, and they just kind of inject a lot of energy into these teams. We've seen it year in and year out. You know, a couple of years ago it was Mark Rassel. So it happened. So you just hopefully hit the lottery with one of these guys, and right now the Comets are actually doing pretty well.
Shane, I can sense that you've got a little extra bounce in your step. You're ready for these games.
Yeah, you know, this is what it's all about. You know, this is a privilege to be in this situation, and the guys are embracing it too. You know, they are totally cool. They know what the mission is. You know, right now they hold their destiny. They don't need any help. Of course, some help would be nice, but hey, they just know they win hockey games. They're in the playoffs, and then when you get your ticket to the dance, you know, anything can happen.
I know you talk a lot about your pregame playlist. I wonder, are you superstitious? Like when the Comets are playing well, do you stick with the same playlist? What do you got for tonight?
Oh, no, I'm always making a new playlist. Tonight I mixed it up a little bit. I went with Creator and Death Angel. We put a couple of Slayer songs in there, but not too much. I threw in some Suicidal Tendencies, which is something I haven't done in the playlist this year.
Shane, enjoy it. We'll look forward to your call tonight. And got to get some wins out of these next four.
Yes, we do. We'd love to get all four.
Shane, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thanks a lot, Brad.
Yep, that is Shane Alberani, voice of the Comets. And, of course, the Comets take on the Wheeling Nailers tonight from Wheeling. And Shane Alberani has the call on WoWo, 1190 AM and 92.3 FM. Coming up on the other side of the break, it's KB Kevin Bowen who joins us from Indianapolis. We'll talk all subjects, Purdue, NFL draft, etc. Maybe even a little Kentucky news and get KB's thoughts. We'll see if we can get in with KB. He's joining us on the other side. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and joining us now on the Sports Rush guest line from 93.5-107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis, morning show host on the wake-up call. It is Kevin Bowen. KB, how are you?
Hey, Brett, doing well. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Enjoying some of the warmer weather. We've got baseball in town. Has their minor league team started yet?
Yeah, they had one home series last week. Paul Skeens, one of the top prospects in baseball, made his Victory Field debut and bowed down several guys north of 100 in his three innings of work. So, yeah, they're on the road this week at Toledo. They actually had decent weather, a little chilly, but it looks like next week when they're back at home should be pretty nice for them.
Is Livy Dunn still dating Paul Skeens? That was an item last year, right?
Yeah, boy, 21-year-old me would probably be a little bit more abreast of that situation. I think my wife would be very happy that I don't know the answer to that question.
Come on, where's your TMZ hat? Let's go.
Sure, that thought has crossed my mind. I haven't seen or heard any craze around Victory Field of her yet. Granted, I assume she'd be, you know, in some very nice suite if and when she does make an appearance.
I'm just trying to help you with a connection on a potential guest down the road that, you know, Livy sure. Dunn might be a source for you. Kevin, we got a number of things we want to talk about. I'm going to end with NFL, the draft, and what the Colts are planning on. But let's start with the Purdue Boilermakers coming out of their Final Four appearance. And they get an expected win against North Carolina State. I was not surprised at all about that. I don't think most of the country was either. Vegas certainly was not surprised. But then they take on UConn, and it's like they finally met their match. But here's the thing I'm shocked at, and I don't know if this surprised you and what kind of feedback you got down there in Indianapolis. But all along, we thought the downfall of Purdue would be if someone packed the paint and absolutely swarmed Zach Edey and Purdue couldn't hit three-point shots. In this case, UConn almost took a completely opposite approach defensively. They made sure not to give Purdue any three-point looks and man up against Zach Edey. Were you surprised at that strategy and how well it worked?
Well, I was surprised by the effectiveness. The strategy itself did shock me. I mean, again, Donovan Klingon, I would argue, is the only player in college basketball that would make you sleep somewhat well at night that you could think you could even pull it off. Because, you know, I think you watch the first 10 minutes, Brett, Zach Edey was incredible, right? I mean, it was I was in awe at some of the shots he was making. And I was sitting there, you know, thinking to myself, can he keep this up? Because I just feel like the difficulty of the shot and where Klingon was making him shoot from at times and just the general work that Edey had to go about to get those early buckets. I'm like, man, for 40 minutes, I know Edey's a rare, rare commodity, but, you know, will he be able to do that? And then, you know, I think everything changed there right around that under eight timeout when, you know, he did get a little tired. He had to travel. They took him out. Boom, three-point play for Klingon when Edey's on the bench. And that, I thought that was kind of the first crack of it. To me, though, the suffocation of the three-point line, it's one of the wilder things, frankly, I've ever seen. Purdue was 1 of 7 from three. To put that into perspective, they average 8 of 20. So if you just strictly said Purdue had an average three-point shooting game, tack on 7 more makes, tack on obviously, you know, whatever, 13 more attempts from three, it's the fewest amount of three-pointers we've seen from a Purdue basketball team in a game in 10 years. It's the fewest amount of three-point attempts we've seen in a national title game going back to 95, and obviously the three-point line is much different than it was even back then. So, you know, when you put those numbers into perspective, it's just wild. And it's not even like the 7 attempts where Lawyer took 3 and Lance Jones took 3 and Brayden Smith took 1. I mean, you know, Lance Jones and Fletcher Lawyer, I don't think they shot a 3 until the very end or the final few minutes. It was just crazy how successful UConn was at that. You know, if they could have got Klingon that second foul in the first half, I am curious, would that have changed things? Clearly, UConn's backup could stay on the floor. He fouled out in 5 minutes, and they doubled when he came in the game. But still, it was just an unbelievable game plan. They stuck to it after Edey's great start, and they certainly got the last laugh.
You know, Kevin, I was thinking about this a couple of nights ago. I thought, you know, there's two strategies you could probably go with when you take on Purdue, and one is to suffocate Edey, always throw doubles at him. That's a complicated game plan. That is something where I think you can't get it accomplished well in a one-day scout. One thing that's pretty easy is to tell your guys, just hug the three-point shooters, don't let them get a shot. That's easier for a one-day scout. Do you think maybe just having a one-day scout could have influenced what UConn did against Purdue?
That's a good question, Brad. I don't know if they watched NC State at all. I mean, NC State did a whole lot of digging on Edey, and, you know, they did turn him over. But, you know, at the end of the day, while they stayed away from really fouling Purdue, I thought a ton, you know, Purdue still hit, what, 8 or 9 threes, I think it was, on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that we probably don't talk enough about from Monday night was just, you know, 14 offensive rebounds for UConn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is such usually a weapon in Purdue's favor. If I remember correctly, I want to say the start of Saturday night against NC State, Lawyer and Lance Jones hit some early threes off of offensive rebounds. And, you know, everyone that's played basketball knows how chaotic those moments can be. Everyone's going to rebound. You lose track of your man. All of a sudden, the offensive team gets the board, they kick it out, and you're in scramble mode. Well, Purdue just never got UConn into scramble mode either. So I really think, just to simple it down, I think there was one team in college basketball that could, you know, execute a game plan like they did. I mean, you would think Big Ten scouting is pretty, pretty good, and you know, clearly no team has had an answer for Purdue on a consistent basis over the last couple of years there. So, yeah, it was just an absolute buzzsaw. And, you know, even the three-point attempts they took, it's not like I sat there and thought, oh, man, they're passing up a bunch of looks, or, oh, they finally got a clean one. I think they ended the first half, if I'm not mistaken, with 2 3-point attempts, and the two was Miles Colvin on a challenge three kind of late clock, and then Braden Smith made that fadeaway near the UConn bench, and that was a very challenged three. So, yeah, maybe the short scout has something to do with that. Obviously, UConn scout, you know, would have been longer than just 36 hours, given how people, you know, divide up the scouts for the quick turnarounds during the tournament amongst the coaching staff. But still, clearly UConn and Dan Hurley, all credit to him. And you know what? I would add this, too, on Hurley. You know, what, about 10 minutes into that game, you know, Tracy Wolfson interviews him, and he was very honest and like, hey, we're going to have to change it up. I mean, it's not working on Edie right now. And he didn't change it up. He stuck with it. Now, again, if Klingon gets that second foul, does he get forced into that? That would have been fascinating to see. But he stuck with it. And, again, UConn is able to absolutely dominate that aspect of the game.
Well, part of the not working was when he had to go to the bench, and it wasn't Klingon that was on Edie. And when that switch was made, there was a mismatch. But when we look at UConn now, back-to-back national champs, at what point do we call it a dynasty?
Yeah, that's obviously a big word. How about this? I'll give you my thoughts, and I'll let you define it however you would like. To me, I was born in 1989, Brett. To me, it's the greatest two-year run I've seen in college basketball. And I get you can point to UNLV, you can point to Duke, you can point to Florida, of course, 06, 07.
Mm-hmm.
But the sheer dominance of 12 straight wins, all by at least 13 points, they easily covered all of those games, if you want to look at it from that standpoint. You throw in the fact that unlike Florida in 06 and 07, unlike Duke, a little bit of unlike UNLV, you know, it's not like UConn ran it back by any means. They lost their top two scorers. They lost, I think, five of their top eight from last season. So, to me, it's, you borderline got to go back to IU 75-76 or even UCLA, really, if you want to put it into some of those terms. You know, dynasty, the reason I guess I'm a little hesitant on that word is, like, when I hear that, I kind of think of, like, you know, a handful of years or a little bit longer than that. And, I mean, obviously UConn's got whatever you want to call it, amount of titles they've won since 99. That's something. But it's, again, wildly impressive what they've done. And, you know, Hurley is a cocky you-know-what, but the quote that he said that I just could not agree with more is, we make a really hard tournament look really easy. And they do. I mean, it's just astonishing the difficulty of the NCAA tournament and how easy UConn has made it look. And, you know, the stat of if you combine – you know, I think this year's tournament run, I want to say they trailed for 6 of the 240 minutes that they played. I mean, it's not like a team has gotten on them at all. Somebody else I saw had a wild stat about how much they've trailed in the second halves of these games. It was like the first game against Iona last year as a 4-13. I think they trailed for like, whatever, the first minute of that second half. They played St. Mary's in round two. They trailed for like the first 30 seconds of that second half, and that's it. The last 10 games, they have not trailed in the second half of any of these tournament games. So describe it with whatever word you want to, or label whatever word that you want to, but to me, it's the greatest thing I've seen in my lifetime.
Not the only big news in college basketball. Coach Cal is leaving Kentucky, taking the job at Arkansas, and now you've got a big job that's open. But with IU scheduled to play Kentucky, how much luster is lost on this matchup when you don't get a shot at Coach Calipari?
It's funny, Brad. I don't know if we directly spoke right after this happened, but, you know, I was sitting there thinking, you know, 2025 through 2028, will Cal coach any of them, let alone get to the Assembly Hall matchup in 2028? And then, like, will Mike Woodson be coaching any of all of them? All, if not any of them. Like, those are pretty real combos. Obviously, Calipari, we know the answer on that. We'll see about Mike Woodson with this. So, yeah, you know, it just seemed like at this point, both parties mutually are pretty happy with it. I mean, UConn, or Kentucky fans, excuse me, I have heard from very few that are, like, mad or disappointed that Cal is gone. Now, you know, maybe talk to me in whatever, a couple of years, they might feel differently about it. But it just seems like something that both parties mutually agreed with. So, yeah, it is pretty crazy to just kind of imagine him not on that sideline, because there was, you know, some turnover, obviously, after Patino, and we'll see how the rest of it plays out with, you know, Scott Drew's name and, you know, how that domino effect, you know, plays off of it. But, yeah, just a crazy college basketball year of the domino effect of, you know, SMU all of a sudden leading to USC, leading to Arkansas, leading to Kentucky, and just the openings we've had in our little Midwest bubble. Kentucky and Louisville to Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah.
Those are four, obviously, extremely prominent programs.
You forgot IUI or IUPUI, our buddy Paul Cassaro down there.
Shout out to Paul Cassaro.
Those giant jobs. Paul Cassaro got one. All right, KB, do have to ask you who's going to be next at Kentucky. Who do you think? Does Scott Drew end up in that job?
Well, it was funny. I had somebody very randomly message me, and they were like, yeah, you know, I got connections in Valpo. Scott Drew's going to take it. I don't know much about Scott Drew. Scott Drew in Kentucky just doesn't necessarily seem like a marriage that I've thought about. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it's something that he would like to do, and who knows what that money's going to look like. Again, purely from an entertainment standpoint, like, I want Rick Pitino. I mean, I think that would just be juicy. I think it'd be electric. Sign me up for that. So, yeah, that's where I would go with it. But, yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, if it's not, you know, Scott Drew, do we get kind of the same names that were rumored with Louisville? And do those turn them down? Is it turned into a Pat Kelsey situation? Again, I don't think Kentucky's there, but, you know, you are kind of an interesting part of the cycle of, you know, it wasn't like Kentucky was first. You've had a lot of, you know, big Power 5 jobs already get filled up, you know, before Kentucky now here in, you know, almost mid-April, then enter the fray.
If you do have Scott Drew, you end up with almost a train that adds another empty car, because you'll have Baylor open, and then you got to decide who goes to Baylor. I mean, it seems like until they hire an assistant coach, this is going to continue.
Well, and I thought Baylor, I could be wrong, I thought Baylor's top assistant took the Florida Atlantic job. I mean, we had Tom Crean on our show Monday, and obviously he's very close to Coach Cal, and so we were asking about it, and he's like, I just think this is going to be more of the nature. It's just impatient ADs, impatient boosters, NIL funders, everyone wants to describe them, and they look at it as quick fixes. You know, I choose to believe to sustain something, you still need to have a chunk or a core of it come from, you know, if you're going to go portal, it still needs to be multi-year portal guys. That's kind of what UConn has had, and certainly Purdue has been much more the high school focus. But I still think it's sustain something for multiple years, but you know, you can look at some other instances of teams, and you know, it is very portal heavy. I mean, you know, again, Utah State, who Purdue played in round two, and they hired a new coach. I don't think they brought back a single player, and yet they won the Mountain West and had, you know, 25 some wins and got an 8 seed. So I do think the wild, wild west in the portal also applies to coaches and, you know, ADs as well.
Kevin Bowen joining us here on the Sports Rush. Kevin, I wanted to ask you about Indiana State, but we'll have to save that topic. Maybe we'll have to let the dust settle of everything, the storm that's going on in Terre Haute right now. But I want to real quick ask you about the NFL. We're getting real close to the draft, and it starts, to me, it looks like Chicago has kind of settled in on Caleb Williams. The big question is the three wide receivers, the top three on the board. Are the Colts going to be able to play for any one of those three, whether they have to trade up, which I assume they will? Is that something that you could see Chris Ballard finally breaking free from his own skin and going up and getting a wide receiver?
Yeah, you know, I probably would have laughed at the thought, you know, maybe 24 hours ago, but then you have these reports coming out that Malik Nabers, one of those top three wideouts, reportedly going to take a top 30 visit to the Colts coming up on Thursday. And, you know, typically when you do that, you're just trying to kind of complete the background on a player, solidify homework. But at times, it's not like you get unlimited top 30 workouts. I don't think you just bring a guy in if you think there's no chance in the world you would ever draft said player. So I don't know what to make of that. I mean, every mock draft I've seen, Brett, Lee Davis isn't getting out of, you know, whatever, the top six, top seven, maybe. So that one is a bit head-scratching to me. And obviously, Chris Bowers' reputation, and understandably, is he does not trade up. He's done it. If you look at the first three rounds, I believe the only time he's done it is to get Jonathan Taylor, a couple picks in round two a few years ago, and then Nick Cross in the third round, you know, back just a couple of drafts ago. So that's not his MO at all. But I do go back to a Ballard comment at the end of the season. You know, what is the biggest area of improvement? What do you need to add to your roster? And then he said, you know, we need to get more explosive. We need to add more explosive talent. Neighbors is unquestionably that. And, you know, is this the time where you do something out of the ordinary? Again, knowing Ballard, I would say no, but I'm just trying to draw a little bit of like, okay, where could this be coming from? And again, just to trade up, I mean, if you want to trade up from 15 to 8 or wherever you think Neighbors could go, right, that is a huge, huge asking price to move up, you know, seven spots into the top half of round one. So, yeah, I wish I had like a little bit more of an educated answer on it, but I would still be astonished to see them actually do that.
You have to give up, well, you trade first round picks in this year's draft and then give up a third and maybe a second next year. Do you think that's enough to get into the top 10, get a run at him?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'd have to probably look at like a trade value chart to really feel a little bit more confident in that. But, yeah, I think ballpark-wise you're there. And, of course, you know, if you do that, then it's like, okay, where are you at a corner? Where are you at, you know? Safety, I still think, is in the eye. I still think pass rusher. I think an edge rusher makes some sense as well. So, yeah, that would be wild, to say the least.
KB, always enjoy chatting with you. Have a great rest of the week, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Brett. Have a great week.
Yep, that is Kevin Bowen, co-host on The Morning Show down at 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. We got to take a timeout. We're going to come back. We'll put the final touches on this Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back. Final time to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. Brett Rump, Adam Lundy, just about to head out of here, going downtown, Tin Caps Baseball. Hey, I get to be on the radio with Mike Maz tonight, so you'll enjoy Maz, Rump, and Adam Lundy on the controls for Tin Caps Baseball tonight against the Lake County Captains. Hopefully this weather doesn't come moving in too quickly with too much force, and we're able to get the game in. It looks like the rain's going to push off until after 9 o'clock. We hope that forecast holds true, and the Tin Caps can get a game in tonight. They need one. They got to get a win. They are sitting 1-3 after the loss last night in their home opener to Lake County, 7-2. Captains crushed the long ball last night. So we'll be coming to you in about 15 minutes from now, 20 minutes from now or so, with the pregame show from Parkview Field. Big thanks to our guests that appeared on the show, Sam King. Of course, Shane Alberani, voice of the Comets, go Comets tonight. And Kevin Bowen from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. Have a great hump day night, and we will talk to you tomorrow 4 to 6, another edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.